Nuketown Radioactive number 67 for Monday, May 19th, 2008. On this edition of Nuketown Radioactive, my toddler discovers the word that all podcasters hate. We spend a day at the land of make-believe, and I prepare to head to Balticon. Then, in Netheads, I check out the digital front of role-playing game PDFs, try out Firefox 3 Release Candidate 1, and experiment with a new notification gadget for Mac OS X.
My friends, geek dads travel in packs. Here comes Ken Newquist with Nuketown Radioactive.
Well, folks, welcome to Radioactive number 67. I am your host, Ken Newquist, and yes, as you may have guessed from the sound of my voice, I am getting over a cold. It hit me with, just a gale force winds on Friday. I think I was feeling okay, and then started getting a little tickle in the back of my throat, and by Friday night, I just was completely dragging through our weekly D&D game, and then Saturday, man, I was just completely socked out on the couch. The good side to that is that I was able to catch up on Doctor Who, Battlestar Galactica, a bunch of other stuff that I had TiVo'd but hadn't had a chance to watch, because the thing about my colds is I generally have a really hard time sleeping. So most of Saturday night and a good chunk of Sunday night, I just was awake on the sofa, just kind of staring at the ceiling and alternating between trying to go to sleep and watching TV. So net-net, I would rather have not been sick, but, you know, if you got to be sick, then why not watch sci-fi, right? So before I got sick, I had the chance to go to the Land of Make-Believe with my daughter. Now, if those of you who aren't familiar with this, the Land of Make-Believe is a kid-centric amusement park in Hope, New Jersey. I'd heard about it growing up, but I'd never actually been there. So this was a learning experience for me. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's really kind of meant for like the preschooler slash kindergarten, first grader, second grader kind of set. There's a lot of smaller rides, so it's all stuff that little kids can go on, as opposed to, say, going to Great Adventure, where you've got roller coasters, like big roller coasters. They have a very small roller coaster at the Land of Make-Believe, but it's microscopic. It's tiny compared to the stuff that you'd see at Great Adventure or, say, Dorney Park. Now, I did find that Tilt-A-Whirls are evil. It's been a while since I've been on a Tilt-A-Whirl, and these are the one things that, you know, spin you around in circles. And I went on it with my daughter and our friend's daughter who came with us on the trip, and the girls were fine when they got off, but I was positively green. And I think that's probably because I didn't get enough sleep the night before, because Luke had a cold and had generally not been sleeping very well, so thus we had not been sleeping very well. And I think, you know, I tend to get dizzy anyway on these kind of rides, and combined with a lack of sleep, it wasn't pretty. So I was able to hold on to my lunch, thankfully, but that pretty much did it for me for the rest of the day. I just kind of stayed off of all the spinny rides, which I got to say really dominate the offerings at the Land of Make-Believe. Now, we also went to Santa's Barn, which is kind of this Christmas-themed barn that they have at the Land of Make-Believe. Those of you who've been there probably remember it from your childhood. Jordan was less than thrilled with the with Santa's Barn. We started to go into it. It was really dark, you know, and she kind of got through the dark part. And she was a little apprehensive. And then we get upstairs, and they've got like this open area where there's fake snow everywhere and illuminated Christmas tree lights. And it's supposed to be kind of evocative of Christmas, but you know, I can see how it would really creep you out as a kid, because it's dark. It's got a lot of Christmas tree lights. There's the smell of the fake snow, you know. So either you're going to love it or you're going to hate it. And Jordan hated it. So I took her down out of that. And, you know, I can't really fault her. You know, when I was a kid, I certainly had my freak out moments, including a memorable time where I screamed my head off and forced my parents to take me out of the haunted house at Disney World. So it's just kind of, it's kind of payback 20 years down the line, or maybe 30 years down the line. Anyway, it was ultimately fun. Jordan loved going on this one frog ride and the mini roller coaster. And of course, the carousel, which had, which is very nice. I mean, it's your typical standard carousel with lots of horses and such. So she was really enjoying that. And we had just the right mix of parents and kids. There were three parents there, my wife, me, and then our friend. And there were four kids. There was Jordan, her friend, who's about the same age, and then two toddlers. And that was just about right, because one of us could always be watching after the toddlers while the other two were keeping track of the older kids. So I think it's a good place to go if you're looking for just kind of a nice day away with the little kids without having to get sucked into all the craziness that is Great Adventure or any Six Flags park. In other parenting news, I took the kids canoeing on the Bushkill Creek, which is about 2 or 3 miles from my house. The impetus for this was that friends of ours who have twin boys who are a little bit over 2 years old, in other words, not much older than my son Luke, they got some land up in Vermont that is next to a lake. They want to be able to take the boys out on the water. And they really haven't had a chance to expose the boys to going in a boat or anything like that on the water. So we have a canoe, so we thought, well, why not get them in the canoe? Now, originally the thought was, well, maybe we should take them on the Delaware, but that made me really apprehensive because the Delaware River is a fairly large river. I mean, it's no Mississippi, but it's bigger than people give it credit for. It's deep, it's fast running, and I think it's easy to get yourself into trouble on the Delaware pretty quickly. So my thought was, well, why not go someplace that's a little bit more controlled and the water isn't quite so deep or fast running? And that brought us to the Bushkill Creek, which is only a couple miles from my house. So the first great adventure was actually loading the canoe onto the Highlander. We've taken the canoe down to the Delaware a bunch of times, but we haven't done it in a couple years, at least not since the kids were born, and not since we've had the Highlander. The last time we did this, we had a Jeep Cherokee, which, although a lot of people don't take their Cherokees off-roading, really is designed for the whole outdoor lifestyle thing. It really it has all of the brackets and hooks and stuff that you need to be able to secure a canoe easily. The Highlander, not so much. So once we finally got this thing onto the top of the car without breaking anything, we went down to the river and, down to the creek, and unloaded it and stuck the kids in the canoe. And then my wife and her friend just kind of like walked the canoe up and down the creek for a while. And the kids got a chance to get used to being on the water. And it went really well. I mean, the boys really enjoyed it. Jordy really enjoyed it. And once we kind of did that basic kind of walking up and down the creek thing, I took Jordy out in the canoe and we just kind of paddled up and down a little bit. And it was a lot of fun. I think everybody did a pretty good job. I'd love to go back down to the Bushkill at some point and try it again. You know, I kind of forgotten how much I enjoyed canoeing until we were back out on the water. It is a lot of fun. You know, it's something you have to be careful with, especially when you hit rapids. But, you know, it is a nice change of pace. Hey, it's like a live-action video game, right? So I think maybe we'll go back down to the Bushkill again at some point to once again get the kids familiarized with being on the water. I don't think I'm ready to take Luke out onto the Delaware just because it freaks me out too much to have a kid that young out on the water. But, you know, Jordan being 5 is definitely able to listen to what we tell her to do, and I think would probably go a lot better being on the river. So that's something else to look forward to this summer. And in Luke news, he has discovered how to say That's right, the word that every podcaster hates, Luke now knows how to say. This is, I guess this is a major linguistic step forward, right? will be the next word that he learns. I think he learned it almost entirely from his sister, because Jordan has a tendency to say quite a lot when she's trying to figure out what she wants to say next. So it was just, it's just so amusing to hear him say it for the first time. It's actually backed off a little bit. He hasn't been using it quite as frequently over the last couple of days. But, you know, for the first like 2 days he learned this new word, he was saying it almost continuously before launching into some phrase like, "I see, go." Now, venturing back into the land of the geeky, I'm going to Balticon 42. That's right, I will be at Balticon 42 this weekend in Baltimore, and we'll actually be rooming with Doug Rapsom from Geek Acres. You can expect blogging from Blogicon. You can expect blogging from Balticon, and who knows, maybe even a podcast if I can figure out how to get one together in that amount of time. I think I might have to sign a recorder out of the library and try it out, because, man, it's just going to be an awesome opportunity to actually be at Balticon, be with all these podcasters whom I've been listening to for years, haven't ever actually met. I mean, heck, Mer Lafferty's going to be there. I mean, Mer and I talk almost, you know, I don't know, a gazillion times a month on Twitter, but I've never actually met her. So this will be just a really cool opportunity. Still no schedule for Balticon at this point, which, you know, kind of messes with your whole ability to plan what you're going to do that weekend. But I got to figure that it's going to be fun regardless. So I'm not too hung up on that, because, man, I'm going to be at freaking Balticon. It just rocks. So thanks to the wonders of time-shifted podcasting, since I started that recording, I actually got the Balticon schedule because they posted it to the website, which is even cooler. And by the time you guys get this, Balticon will probably be over anyway, so it's kind of a moot point. But in any case, I'm very excited about going to Balticon. It's going to be great. I'm going to be there with Doug Rapsom. I'm going to get to see a bunch of other cool folks from the Podosphere, the Twittosphere. I'll get to see Nate Lilly from Space Westerns, who I went to college with. It's ultimately just going to be very, very cool. So in terms of feedback from last week, I got a couple of posts back. First of all, I heard from one of the folks at Twiddla who mentioned that it turns out that, hey, you can roll dice in Twiddla. That's right. You just type a d20 and it rolls a d20. I haven't actually tried to see if it'll do the other d's, you know, if you do a d6, if it'll roll a d6 or whatever. But that's pretty cool, because then that brings it one more step towards doing the whole virtual game table thing with Twiddla, which, if you remember from the last podcast, is basically this online conferencing / whiteboarding application that you can run in your web browser. So pretty nifty. I actually just recommend it to my mom, because she wanted to do some online audio conferencing with some friends of hers, and I think it'd be kind of nifty. And as she pointed out, with gas being as expensive as it is, the whole meeting online thing really becomes very, very attractive. So I definitely suggest you check out Twiddla, which is at twiddla.com. Now, the other thing I heard from Steve from the Wicked Good podcast was he mentioned that Feedburner does not track direct downloads, which I was actually aware of, but I didn't mention. So basically, Feedburner is only going to keep track of the stuff that gets downloaded via your feed. Now, there's a hack that he suggested that you can do to get around that, which is basically to, when you include the hard-coded link to the MP3 file on your website, link to it via Feedburner. So Feedburner has a link to that MP3. Use that link so that the download will, in fact, get counted by Feedburner. All of those kinds of links on Nuketown get generated by Drupal, and I'm not going to go in and hack the code in order to do that, but my workaround for this is basically just to download the log files and to grep them to be able to get the complete download information. That'll ultimately give me what I'm looking for, because it'll tell me how many partial downloads I had and how many complete downloads I had. And, you know, those are just kind of like harder numbers, right? But Feedburner is awesome because it gives me an indication like right away of how many people are subscribed to the feed, how many listeners a given episode has had, at least directly through the feed, which is pretty nifty. So in case you're wondering, at this point, Feedburner feed for Radioactive is averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of 120 to 130 subscribers. The Nuketown feed is adding or averaging around 60 subscribers. And as of the last time I checked, Radioactive number 66 had something like 95, 96 downloads. And that was just through the feed. So I'm thinking that when I did a quick little grep of the log previously, it looked like I'll probably get another 50% of direct downloads on the site. So we're probably looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 150 for the last show, which, you know, isn't amazingly huge, but I'm not disappointed because I think we have a good little community here. And, well, you know, I enjoy the podcast just because I enjoy the podcast, not necessarily to be, you know, rich and famous and all that. But in any case, I will crunch the direct link numbers at the end of the month. And who knows, maybe things will be a little higher. We'll see how it goes. I do know from previous adventures in file download tracking that the show has hit as high as like 500, 600. I think some of the Battlestar Galactica ones actually went up to 800 or 900 when the show was mentioned on Winging It. So it occasionally spikes much higher, but I think we're probably going to end up averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of about 150 to 200 listeners a show.
Hi, this is Ross Payton, one of the hosts of Role Playing Public Radio.
And I'm Tom Church, the other guy.
Yeah, we do a regularly updated podcast on RPGs. We do at least two episodes a month. We offer commentary, comedy, and actual play.
And occasional and inane stuff no one cares about, too.
Exactly. Our commentary, each episode focuses on a gaming topic, such as how to deal with large groups or horrible gamers, or how to make old games new and exciting again. Our comedy offers such stories as the Law and Orcdom, a fantasy D&D version of Law and Order, and our actual play does games such as Call of Cthulhu, the end of the world as we know it. So if you're interested in any of that, give us a try.
And if you're interested in inane stuff, give that a try too.
Yeah, Roleplaying Public Radio, slangdesign.com/RPPR.
So I just want to warn you that if you hear any cries of anger and frustration from the background, that would be my son Luke, who is adamantly protesting his bedtime. Despite the fact that it's 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night, he steadfastly believes that he should not have to sleep and that I am being a tyrannical overlord by compelling him to do so. I'm not quite sure how long of a nap he had today, but I'm thinking maybe too long. So on to Netheads, the first thing I wanted to talk about was Daniel Perez's excellent podcast, The Digital Front. This is a podcast about the online distribution of tabletop role-playing games, and right here we have like a perfect demonstration of the niche power of podcasting. I mean, this is something that you would probably never have heard about on regular radio. I don't care if it's public radio, broadcast radio, satellite radio. It's just not something that the mainstream or any sliver of slightly off the mainstream is going to cover, because honestly, I mean, it's role-playing games, it's PDFs, it's online distribution, and although there are lessons to be learned here for the mainstream, it's just not something you're going to see, right? But here we are, we're podcasting, and Daniel has put together this just great podcast where he has conversations with electronic publishers like Fred Hicks of Evil Hat and Philip J. Reed of Ronin Arts, and he talks with them about their business. And he does a lot of cool things that are interesting. Well, let's back up for a second. I think it's a fascinating listen for anyone who's interested in digital media distribution, gaming or otherwise. So I think that, you know, if you're not necessarily into gaming, but you're interested in the future of books in PDF or anything that's being distributed electronically that used to have a Dead Tree edition or had like a physical edition, this is a podcast that's worth listening to, because this market is a microcosm of what could happen in the mainstream publishing over the next few years. And Daniel's really well versed in it, thanks to his own work with High Moon Media Productions, which is a digital publisher. Daniel interviews his guests about things like how they got their start in the business, the kind of products they're publishing, what their thoughts are on electronic distribution. Like, for example, I thought that the Fred Hicks interview was really great because he was talking about how they bundled Spirit of the Century with the print version and how ultimately that bundled version sells really well and is really helping the game in many different ways. Another thing that was interesting about that was the whole Fate SRD, where they basically have a free version of the game that people can go out and get. Well, actually, it's not the free version of Spirit of the Century, but it's the rules that gave rise to Spirit of the Century, and how that kind of created a good buzz that helped them ultimately when they went to release Spirit of the Century. So, really good podcast. I think it has a lot of good insights. And like I say, I think this is a great microcosm of where e-publishing could be heading in the future. Now, on a geeky note, actually two geeky notes. I've been trying out some new software applications for my Mac, and I thought I might share my experiments. The first is Growl, which is a notification system for macOS 10.4 and 10.5. And basically the idea here is that it will interact with different applications to display messages to you when things happen. So for example, if you had mail open but not currently active, it would pop up a little Growl message that says, hey, you have a new message when a new message arrives. My FTP client is GrowlAware, so if I'm doing a very large download, it will be working in the background. When everything's done, it sends a notice to Growl, and Growl says, hey, document completed. Same thing with, I think it's Safari, has Growl notifications, so when a download completes, Growl will let me know. It can be overwhelming because, for example, you can tie it into Twitter, and every time there's a new tweet, a little message pops up that says, hey, here's the message from Twitter. And, you know, Twitter can go pretty fast and furious, and you can get a whole lot of messages coming in a really short period of time. And it can really just be overwhelming. So I think it's definitely a tool that you need to tweak. But overall, I'm finding it a useful addition to my work operating system. The other thing I've been playing around with is Firefox 3 Release Candidate 1, which is the first full-blooded release candidate that we've seen for Firefox 3. Firefox 3 is supposed to be quicker and more stable than Firefox 2. Thus far, I haven't had a lot of experience with it being a lot quicker. I don't know that I had any problems with the speed in Firefox 2. I did have stability issues with Firefox 2 on the Mac, and actually a good test of it was tonight, where I unleashed my daughter on Webkinz, which is this online virtual world for kids, and it kept having a problem in Firefox. I don't know if it was Flash causing the memory leak or what, but generally speaking, Firefox would just slow to a crawl when she was playing this game over the course of like half an hour. I put her on Firefox 3, no problems tonight. So that is definitely a good sign. Most of my extensions, which are the little add-ons that I install to Firefox, don't work with Firefox 3 yet, but you know, that's kind of to be expected. I'm sure everybody was waiting for at least the release candidate before they started updating their extensions. I know personally I maintain one at work, and I'm not planning on touching that thing until, well, probably right about now when the release candidate came out. It has some nice features added into it. Amongst those are the ability to quickly star something for a bookmark. The RSS feed icon is very prominent, and you can tag bookmarks, which I'm not sure if you could do it under Firefox too. I don't think you can. Tagging is nifty, but honestly, I moved to using Delicious for my bookmarks a long time ago, and I don't anticipate moving back. If anything, I'll just use the integrated Delicious bookmarking thing that pulls all of your Delicious bookmarks down into Firefox, and that'd be fine. The thing that I find really kind of annoying is the Get Information button, which appears next to any URLs. I keep clicking it by accident, which summons a pop-up that tells me nothing because the vendor hasn't provided any identity information for that particular site, including sites like Google. So, I mean, if Google's not doing it, well, honestly, I don't know what sites will be. If I click on Get More Information, which is the next part of this dialog box, I can see some useful stuff, like whether the site is using cookies or if Firefox is saving passwords for it, which is nice, but really the interface needs some tweaking. It's just too intrusive as it is now. Now, I will say that as I've been using it, and I've been using Firefox 3 exclusively for about the last week or so, I have gotten a little bit better about not clicking on that button. I think in the last 2 days or so, I haven't clicked on it at all, but it is just really kind of annoying early on. And that's about it. I haven't delved into it much further. It does seem faster, but I'm looking forward to just kind of experimenting with a little bit more, maybe trying out some Firefox 3 specific extensions and doing a little research to find out what other nifty new stuff there might be that I can play with. You can get Firefox at www.getfirefox.com. You can also get Growl at growl.info. And finally, the Digital Front podcast is at www.thedigitalfront.com. And links to all this stuff will be in the show notes.
Come listen to WapCaplets at WapCaplets.net, a gaming podcast where you're in and out in 5 minutes.
That'll about do it for this edition of Nuketown Radioactive. A little short this week, but I'm still feeling kind of under the weather. Lucas is still crying up in his room, and hey, I gotta go start packing for Balticon. I'm always looking for feedback. You can send it to me at nuketown@gmail.com. There are a gazillion other ways to get in touch with me. You can find them on the website at www.nuketown.com.